We'll dedicate this last part of this verse to Bill.
If you read it.
No sin in that.
All right, make sure you're in fellowship. As Peter, here in focusing in on the importance of the local church, especially as it applies to positive volition, in our highest priority and responsibility to apply divine love to ourselves, as literally the Greek so states. And divine love, obviously, is the filling ministry of God the Holy Spirit that makes all other virtues of application acceptable before God, possessing the correct nature and characteristic for all the other aspects of our lives and what we do, think, and say, etc. And obviously, this points to the importance of the nucleus of each individual local church and camaraderie and support of one another as we face antagonism and negative volition otherwise out there in a hostile world, and that we should be able to come together with other positive individuals in assembly and in fellowship, expecting the same goals and thoughts of mind and thinking of the divine viewpoint, isolation of the STA, etc., to draw upon as a resource of encouragement and comfort for our own individual lives. And this obviously looks at the fact that often in the world itself, negative volition is hostile and antagonistic. And those who are of such ilk have a habit of attacking believers in regards to their own incidental failures in their own lives as a means of trying to get leverage, etc., over them. And in contrast to that type of approach to one another, divine love refuses to take into account past failings and sins of those who we are called upon to apply divine love, especially those within our own assembly. And point 33, where we left off, this is the apostle thought in verse 8b, because love covers a multitude of sins. 34, the idea here in Peter's epistle is also expressed in Proverbs 10:12 that I wrote out for you. Hatred stirs up strife, hatred being a manifestation of the STA. But love, again, would be true love in view, covers all sins or a multitude of sins. And obviously, this principle is true theologically based on the love of God manifested through the person of Jesus Christ as he covers all sins, with the exception, obviously, of the sin of unbelief. It doesn't mean that love's not there and not willing to cover all sins, but obviously the benefit is void when one refuses to go on positive volition otherwise in this respect. So, 35, the idea is, in other words, the one that loves does not hold a grudge, but forgives. The one who is willing to isolate their own sin nature and apply doctrine towards others is not of the type of STA ilk that continues to harbor grudges, bad feelings, things of this nature towards other individuals and believers. 36, true love avoids gossip and maligning with regard to another's past sins. People often, again, love to latch on for their own self purposes, others' failures to advance whatever itinerary or scheme that they have in regards to their own antagonism towards others. But true love, obviously, avoids gossip and maligning, because that's STA activity. See? And when it comes to others' past sins, that's just as apropos. Who made you the sin police? See? To go around and talk bad, and you see what, hear what so-and-so did, and all this other stuff. 37, this is not the way those antagonistic to Bible doctrine operate in regards to avoiding gossiping and maligning. Obviously, those antagonistic are maligners themselves, In fact, they are blasphemers because they are attacking God's children, those who are positive to God and His plan, and the ministry of God, the Holy Spirit, that is leading and guiding these particular positive individuals in their own life. And that was 4C, they malign you, they blaspheme. So those antagonistic to doctrine, those negative to doctrine, malign and obviously show they are void of divine love. 38, the phrase covers a multitude of sins. Kalupto, plethos, harmartia in the Greek. Is also used in James 5:20 with respect to a believer that points the way for another believer for reversion recovery. Again, as we saw in James, for a believer to intercede on behalf of another believer regards to the correct doctrine, etc., convincing them of their reversionism, and it assists them in regards to getting back on the right track as God utilizes the individual as a tool in this respect. That too covers a multitude of sins. Obviously, all the constant sinning that the individual would be under as a reversionist. That was 5:20. Let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will deliver his soul from death as sin and death, and will cover a multitude of sins. All the wood, hay, and stubble, etc., and the additional judgment that's going to come upon the reversionist. 39, obviously it is God that forgives, and it is the servant that simply enlightens the reversionist. So 40 here, now the expression is in a different context. 41, the sins that are covered are the sins that are not made and issued in future dealings. In the expression of divine love, you forego the constant criticizing and antagonism, things of this nature that are associated with the principle of hatred, lying, gossiping, things of this nature. And in regards to dealing with like-minded individual believers, incidental sins in their life and the future dealings. So 42, now the one sinning refers to the one loved, obviously here, not the one loving, even though it may be their turn eventually. Remember that. One of these days you may screw up, and you'll be glad of the grace that comes down your path from others. To be so arrogant to think that that's not going to ever happen, we learn in the doctrinal world real quick, never say never. And again, we're dealing with isolated, incidental sins. We're not dealing with reversionism. We have the proper doctrine for reversionists. So the one sinning refers to the one loved, not the one loving. 43, it looks at the application of forgiving each other as necessary. We did not have that grace, that compassion in regards to one another. There's not too many relationships that would last. Relationships across the board essentially are give and take. It says it is in a marriage. You've got to be willing to learn to forgive and move on if you want the relationship to continue to last. Otherwise, if you continue to harbor grudges, things of this nature, all it'll do is take that wedge, that grudge or whatever, and continue to wedge itself. And eventually, a split will occur if it's not getting God under control. So we understand that. And so it is regards to the royal family, our function corporately. Everyone has their STAs. Everyone has their failures. We all stumble in many ways. And we was James and your pastor. We all stumble in many ways. But the issue is who's going to have the tenacity and perseverance to hang in there with Bible doctrine, and who is willing to deal with their sin nature and otherwise keep doctrine as their number one priority in life. That's your real issues. People love to take a non-issues and try to elevate it over what the real issue is. People love to take the issue like in separation and make that the issue. The real issue is you're not in Bible class. And as long as you're not, you're out of God's plan and out of His will. So don't talk to me about superficial doctrines that don't even apply to you, basically, because you don't have enough moxie now to apply it in your own life, because you're a reversionist. See? Of course, you do it with love, not stern like your pastor. Or maybe you do. Who knows? Depends on how close you are to the individual. Keep people to the issue. See? A negative listener will try to circumvent the issues every time. People who reject doctrine will do their best to circumvent that and run around it and do an end run around, you know. I won't say that, but anyway. And you got to keep the issues in front of them. You know, you're worried about doing this and that, and you're not even rebounding. You got to get in fellowship first, As couples often do, we'll argue about something. Well, really, this is a moot point until we get in fellowship and deal with this appropriately. So, and the principle is we got to learn to forgive each other as necessary. And 44, principle here, we are not to relate to another today based on the sins of yesterday. Yesterday's gone. You know, the individual's probably rebound in regards to their personal sins, and you're moving on. That's what you expect from like-minded positive volition. I was a jerk. All right. Rebound. Maybe they personally asked for forgiveness, or maybe they didn't. They just moved on. But we're not to hold up and make public, people's past failures and relate to them based on that. Anybody can engage in a horrendous sin and rebound it and get their act back together and back in line with God's plan. David did it. Now, God had to intercede. It's pretty severe divine discipline to finally wake him up. And there was some strong exhortation that came his way, to get him there. But he woke up and he moved on. And people still held that, tried to hold it over his head, his enemies, those who are antagonistic to doctrine. Those who are positive, they continue to grace him out and saw him for his positive volition. So 45, Peter's words here, it is simply a way of stating the doctrine of forgiveness. Christ taught this doctrine in Matthew 18, 21. Peter came. Maybe Peter's thinking about Jesus' teaching again. Peter came and said to him, "Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me?" That's another like-minded believer. "And I forgive him. Up to seven times?" Now, Peter's probably in this thing, "That's pretty liberal." Once, twice, and no three strikes are out. I'll give him seven strikes. Then he's out. Jesus said to him, "I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven." You need to be a little bit more grace-oriented there, Peter. If he's your brother, he's in there, he's trying to hang in there with Bible doctrine. You need to apply the grace. Also, Luke 17, 3 and 4. Be on your guard. If your brother sins, rebuke him. Sometimes it takes that. Most often it doesn't. Most often, if sins, offenses will come sometime normally and unknowingly. If somebody doesn't know, I'm sorry. I apologize. I didn't know. It was not my intent or whatever. Or maybe it was and I still apologize. Whatever. But you got to be on your guard. And obviously, doctrine is the forefront. And here, the rebuking demands that you talk to the individual. And if he repents, he changes his mind. Obviously, he's not in a hostile mode. He's going to continue to come after you and all this other stuff. You have your right to defend yourself and make the other proper applications that's necessary. In this regard, he repents, forgiven. And if he sins against you seven times a day and returns to you seven times saying, "I repent, I change my mind," forgiving. So, divine love, one who operates in a divine love, will find the grace necessary, willingness to forgive, not hold a grudge, not deal with a person in spite, with revenge tactics, and things of this nature. Obviously, these kind of doctrines are not they're important all the time in regards to our existence with one another and our continued fellowship with one another, living in the flesh. That they're definitely apropos in regards to people maybe leave doctrine, they come back on doctrine. Now, what are you going to do then? You going to sit there and hold it over them like the Corinthians did in regards to the incestuous Corinthians? That's a pretty vile sin. Even the Gentiles would shudder on that one in most occasions. But he got back on positive volition. Isn't that amazing? Look at this guy. Incest. But he was positive. Ultimately, he was positive. God had to jam the you-know-what out of him. Probably get him back around to do it. And the church had to separate corporally in regards to this person. But then he got back on positive volition. And he came back to Bible class. And the Corinthians started treating him like a second-class citizen. Looking down on him in a condescending way because of his past failures. Paul exhorted him, you don't do that. Now you got to extend the guy grace. Now you'll be judging to begin with. He repented. Now how does God deal with you when you repent? And, you know, you rebound. Does he not forgive you? Does 1 John not hold up on every occasion, or does it? 1 John 1:9. Either it does or it doesn't. And we're to emulate that. This is a far cry of what the believer can expect from their enemies, from those antagonistic to doctrine. Continue to harbor mental attitude, murder and hatred, spite, etc. And they're perceived most often. Things that they think about in regards to those who are probably trying to apply doctrine in their life and towards them. 47, bringing up the past and treating others as if they were still involved in SC activity is to violate the second great commandment. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Divine love. Mark 12:31. First great commandment, love God with all your heart, soul, and strength. That means be as positive as you possibly can be. See? And the second is to apply divine love. Those who come to Bible class, part of the royal family, they truly are your neighbors. Even in a greater way than your normal neighbor. At least they're in class. At least they're pursuing, continue to persevere, pursue the truth of doctrine. They're not out there taking issue with it and attacking otherwise. So where does your allegiance lie? 48, any revenge tactics, ostracism, being cliquish and keeping people, you know, away, etc., are at odds with the grace God has extended to the saints to give all indication of applying divine love otherwise. See, again, the principle is divine love is bound to divine love. We are to be one and the same in unity and like-mindedness in this regard. And, you know, that's the way it should be. I mean, you come to Bible class, it's an escape from the negative, hostile world that's out there for at least that short period of time. And you should be able to come and enjoy the fellowship of like-minded believers who, you know, are not going to sit there and unrighteously judge you for all your failures in life. They just see you as another positive individual and they're trying to hang in there like you are. You know, yeah, good to see you and all this other stuff. By the way, if I don't look at you in your eye every time you come to class and I don't personally come and say good to see you, I want you to know I'm saying it publicly. It's good to see you every time you show up. Whether I say it or don't. Understand what's in my heart. So you know, I don't believe anybody except for, no. I see you enough as it is. Just kidding. So this is a far cry from what we expect from those who are negative and antagonistic to doctrine. 49, the hearing of this kind of information is how we grow in grace. See, the growth process is twofold. Grace and knowledge. We have to have grace for ourselves to grow up, and therefore we're expected to extend that grace to others who are obviously positive and trying to run their course. 50, God forgives a multitude of sins in each of our lives every day, as well as across the board, obviously. How many times do you have to rebound per day? And now you can't forgive one little sin, some offense that may come your way, or whatever. When the individual is obviously, you know, they rebound. They're not rejecting doctrine in this regard, so, you know, the things that go with it. 51, divine love is manifest when we do not publish others' failings, but forgive and move on, effectively covering up them up in the sight of others. Instead of making an issue out of it, making it public, letting everybody know through gossip and all this other stuff, you're effectively covering up. You cover each other's isolated incidental sins just like God covers them. Some things, you know, some sins are more public, but even then, sure don't need to be going, you know, outside the church apart from anything legally otherwise. It's nobody else's business. You know, if one thing our society should be getting your goat today is the intrusion of everybody else into everybody else's affairs. Big grief, man. People, even people that call to solicit business and stuff, want to know all this information. This is none of your business. You know. How many pastors do you have in your church? Show up and find out. You know. Can I talk to your music pastor? So, you could, but he can't sing. Fifty-two. Here we have an example of sanctified cover-up. Think about it. How often have you sinned and people don't know about except for God? He graced you out. And he went on. Sometimes he does that. He does that a lot more than probably what we even recognize. Well, that's the way we should deal with one another. With discernment and discreet. So 53, in contrast to the cosmos that rushes to put others' failings up in lights for the purpose of ridicule and derision or other self-gratifications that their STA is conjuring up, we are to treat one another in forgiveness, keeping each other's failings discreet. 54, is this environment of grace that believers should be able to come to and relax, knowing that other adjusted believers will not continue to perpetuate the antagonism and fault finding they may be currently facing in the cosmos. Because they stood for the truth. That is enlightening. All right, now in verse 9, Peter addresses the issue of hospitality. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. You simply have the adjective here to be hospitable or using hospitality below exnos. Exnos. It's used three times here, 1 Timothy 3:2 and Titus 1:8. To one another, again, we have the directional preposition eyes towards. EIS. And here we have the reciprocal pronoun used, alelon, to one another, A-L-L-E-L-O-N. This particular reciprocal pronoun indicates another of the same kind, but the reciprocal aspect of it simply denotes relating to that individual versus the binding effect of the reflexive. Heteros is another of a different kind in the Greek. since your difference of words there. Hospitable to one another without complaint. Without is your preposition anu, A-N-E-U. Independent of, apart from. We saw chapter 3, verse 1, that the negative husband may be one without a word based on one's applications versus their verbal badgering. Complaint. Complaint is your noun here. Gongusmos. G-O-N-G-U-S-M-O-S. It means grumbling or complaining. It's used four times. So be hospitable to one another without complaint. Analysis verse 9. One with the local churches in Asia Minor, functioning in solidarity of true love. That's what brings about unity and harmony in regards to the existence of the local church and camaraderie. They are now prepared to provide a resourceful pool of support for other population outside their geographical canons. Two, this stirs Peter to the exhortation of verse 9, be hospitable to one another without complaint. So they got their individual acts together. Now they have further obligation, obviously, to any other individual who is like-minded and positive outside their own nucleus. So three, the adjective hospitality, loxiknos, functions here as an imperative in the same manner as the adjectives that we saw in 3:8. There he had a list of adjectives that had the imperatival force attached to them to sum up. Let all be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit. Those were all adjectives that had the imperatival force. So he simply inserts the adjective with the same meaning. So for this adjective strictly means, quote, stranger loving, end quote. That means like loving a stranger or kind to strangers. Oh, words get me thinking. Stranger loving. What in the world is that? My wife is probably saying, I know. It means kind to strangers. Five, the background here is not towards friends that do not need a place to stay, whereas we would use a term, and the term is inferred otherwise in regards to applying hospitality. You have somebody over here, you're being hospitable. That's applying it. But here, specifically, he's not looking at towards friends, people that we know, part of our local assembly, that do not need a place to stay, but toward Christians that, for whatever reasons, may be in need of food and shelter. Six, Peter now uses the reciprocal pronoun one another, alelon. That means another of the same kind, to indicate how positive volition is to relate to other positive volition in this vein. Those outside their own particular geographical canon. Seven, the success of early Christianity was from the start built on the willingness to extend hospitality towards missionaries and displaced believers. That was a pretty big and demanding application in the early church. As the apostles went out and others from their midst went out seeking to evangelize and having missionary itineraries, a lot of these traveling all over the known world at that time, would often be in need logistically or physically in regards to food, shelter, things of this nature. And God obviously placed them in the periphery, the right people, necessary for the church to build its foundation and start its growth. So, eight, considering the itinerary and personal needs of communicators, which would be highlighted in this, they would need a place to stay. It wasn't like they had a Howard Johnson at every corner. And they had all the monetary means, you know, unlimited credit card bills. No, they would be in need. And they would be highly dependent on others around them to help them out. 3 John 5 and 6. Beloved, you are acting faithfully in regards to John's friend Gaius in whatever you accomplish for the brothers, and especially strangers. Those strangers, just people he didn't know, but they were otherwise positive, a part of the ministry. And they bear witness to your love, see, an expression of divine love, before the church. And you do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God, dealing with other positive volition appropriately. Then you can contrast that to 2 John 10:11 in regards to, on the other side of the coin, if they're not positive, if they're negative, and they are supportive of false teaching in this vein, John, on the other hand, says you don't even greet these people. So you contrast. You have to contrast. You got to keep your balance. He didn't open your doors to every Tom, Dick, and Harry believer that shows up. Some Pentecostal preacher wants to come and visit me. That doesn't mean I'm going to open my doors and say, come on in. You know, I'd have to obviously evaluate whether or not they're interested in the truth. But not to come in. Promote his own agenda. 2 John 10:11. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching in regards to John's teaching of sound Bible doctrine, do not receive him into your house and do not give him a greeting. For the one who gives him a greeting participates in his evil deeds. You are a supporter of the enemy. You give aid to those who otherwise reject doctrine and are promoting false doctrine otherwise. So you have your two contrasts that John brings out in this regard. But on the good side of the coin, obviously there were those who were adjusted and who were positive and communicators, and they would have needs, and others, it gave them opportunity to apply towards them. 9, in addition to communicators, others might have become believers coming under intense persecution, forced to leave their homes and surroundings in need of help. Back in those days, that was quite often that probably occurred, as they get run out of town on a rail. And it doesn't mean that doesn't occur still today elsewhere in the world. I was talking to another believer the other day, and we was talking about people in different countries willing to go underground, risking their life to go to church. Today, you find believers that have every opportunity to go to church, and they say, you know what? Not interested. Well, we'll see that contrast at the Bema Sea, will we not? But, you know, people find themselves, you never know what kind of test you might come under. You never know, see? And for some, that's the niche that God gave them, the test that they had to endure. And that has come under severe persecution. Had to get up their livelihood, their homes often. And get run out of town, and they're in need. So, obviously, you might be able to think of other circumstances, but these are the two probably main ones. So, 10, persecution sometimes deprived Christians of the necessities of life. And such an exhortation to these early believers was needed. Those who were sent out by Christ were instructed by the Lord on the do's and don'ts of accepting hospitality. So, again, it's just not this open door scenario that's presented here. You've got to take all the doctrine and put it in there. You have the proper attitude in regards to those. Went to places, obviously it's God's directed will for them to do this. And the proper attitude, the proper actions in regards to those who extend hospitality versus those who are and are positive versus those who are negative. Matthew 10, 11 through 14. Christ's instruction to the 12 as they will go out on their missionary itineraries, and then to whatever city or village, verse 11, you enter, inquire who is worthy in it, and abide there until you go away. Who's worthy? Who's positive enough to apply Bible doctrine that, you know, is worthy of housing and having the privilege of housing a positive apostle? Worthy. And so they got to be worthy. And into whatever city or village you enter, inquire who is worthy in it, and abide there until you go away. That's where you should stay. Don't be house hopping around. Don't go pool jumping at the motels. And as you enter the house, give it your greeting. And if the house is worthy, let your greeting and peace come upon it. So obviously, they wouldn't always know what they would run into. They might be given, you know, information that really didn't live up to the standards necessary. But if they were, first and foremost, obviously, it's God's peace. That means God's blessing come upon you. But if it is not worthy, you get there and find out they're antagonistic. They're not really willing to apply whatever else it might be detrimental in regards to their ministry and their livelihood. Let your greeting of peace return to you. So you go in with hoping for the best. If it doesn't work out that way, let your greeting be returned to you. Now, does that mean he says something on the way out the door? Who knows? And whoever does not receive you, nor heed your words. People who tend to reject you, or on the other end of the coin, reject your teaching. As you go out of that house or that city, looking at it individually or corporately, shake off the dust of your feet. Truly I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. The additional judgment that comes upon culpability. Those who are culpable. Compare 40 and 42. He who receives you receives me. Because it goes up the line. Just like those who are antagonistic that blaspheme positive volition are blaspheming God. And so it is in a reciprocal fashion in regards to those who embrace us or don't. He who receives you receives me, and he who receives me receives him who sent me. Goes right up to God the Father. He who receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. He who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. The SG3 that accompanies in regards to the particular applications at hand. And whoever in the name of the disciple gives to one of these little ones, which is technical for positive volition, even a cup of cold water to drink, truly I say to you, he will not lose his reward. Doing it in fellowship, obviously under divine love. Luke 10, 5 and 7. Parallel, whatever house you enter, first say, peace to this house, and if a man of peace is there, your peace will rest upon it, and if not, it will return to you. God will double your blessings in this regard. That's the instructions to the 70 that he sent out, and saying that house, eating and drinking what they give you, for the labor is worthy of his wages. See, Christ expected other like-minded positive individuals to support the ministry. Do not keep moving from house to house. Whatever city you enter, they receive you, eat what is set before you. That's important for the Jews because they're going into church eventually in that dispensation, and all foods will be clean in that regard. Then confer Acts 16 in regards to accounts where applications have been made probably here. The woman Lydia from the city of Thyatira, verse 15, when she and her household had been baptized, she urged us in regards to Paul and company, saying, if you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come into my house and stay. And she prevailed upon us. And she was, doctrine sunk in quickly. She recognized the importance of hobnobbing with the apostles, basically. Of what the truly positive list is about, and offered her hospitality. Quite different the way people think today about pastors. if you have judged me to be faithful. You're the one that has the doctrine. It's up to you to make the decision. Instead of being the arrogant one, I'll determine whether you're worth it or not. You know, that kind of deal. 15:32-34. In regards to the jailer, and they spoke the word of the Lord to him together with all who were in his house. And he conversed, and he took them that very hour of the night, washed their wounds, and immediately he was baptized, he and all of his household. And he brought them in, in regards to Paul and Silas being in prison. And he took care of them and applied hospitality and set food before them, rejoiced greatly, having believed in God with his whole household. It's just like a natural occurrence. Polyvolition is amazing. You may not know another poly individual, but you're with them just a little bit, you know, maybe on the phone or whatever. And it's just like the connection's there. 21:7-17. Not always, but it's like. Again, Paul, the emphasis here, in regards to the brothers, other brothers in Christ, and when we had finished the voyage from Tyre, we arrived at Ptolemais, and after greeting the brothers, we stayed with them for a day. They opened their doors for hospitality in that particular city, 17, and when we had come to Jerusalem, the brothers received us gladly. 28:14. Regards to Paul of Rome, and there we found some in Syracuse, in Rhegium, came up to Petuli. In verse 14, there we found some brothers and were invited to stay with them for 7 days, and thus we came to Rome. 12, Paul urged the Roman church to practice hospitality, and so did the author of Hebrews. Paul's exhortation to the church of Rome, Romans 12. 13. Contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality as part of the royal imperatives of application in Hebrews 13:2. Let love of the brothers continue again under the auspices of divine love. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it. In the Old Testament, Abraham and Rahab illustrate unusual circumstances out of which this application may arise. And Genesis 18 gives us the account of Abraham, where in the heat of the day, out in the middle of Timbuktu, in God's itinerary for him, Yahweh and two angels appear, and the opportunity to apply hospitality comes his way. And we know the story, but it's always good to reread them. Genesis 18. If you're willing to apply doctrine, you may be surprised at the blessing and result that will come from it. And obviously, blessing was there. That was where the birth of Isaac, God sent these Yahweh, etc., and the angels appeared to him. We know angels with him to give him the information of doctrine. Now the Lord appeared to him with the two angels, as we know, chapter 19 brings out. To him, that's Abraham, by the oaks of Mamre, where he was sitting at the tent door in the heat of the day. When he lifted up his eyes and looked, behold, three men were standing opposite him. And when he saw them, he ran to the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth. I said, my Lord, if now I have found your favor in your sight, please not pass your servant by. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. Sending hospitality at the appropriate level, definitely. And I will bring you a piece of bread that you may refresh yourselves. After that, you may go on since you have visited your servant. They said, so do as you have said. So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah, where we dealt with Sarah's daughter and her example, and said, quickly prepare 3 measures of fine flour, knead it, and make bread cakes. Abraham also ran to the herd, took a tender and choice calf, and gave it to the servant, and he hurried to prepare it. He offered him the basic necessities, but his heart is full of grace. And it wasn't just bread and water. he's going to give them the feast. So, that's the way he wants to apply. Applying at an extremely high level. And people do that, and it's really nice. It's really good to see these kind of applications. He took curds and milk, and the calf which he had prepared, and placed it before them. He was standing by them under the tree as they ate. And then they go on, as we know with the story, in regards to Sarah and the promise of the birth of Isaac. Then you have Rahab in Joshua 2. Rahab, the prostitute, extending her hospitality to the Jewish spies and protecting them. And look what blessing came on her for that. In the line of Christ, her and her old family situation were spared when the Jews came in and wiped out everybody else. Verse 1, then Joshua the son of Nun sent two men to spy secretly from Shittim, saying, go view the land, especially Jericho. So they went and came to the house of a harlot, whose name was Rahab, and lodged there. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, behold, men from the sons of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land. The king of Jericho sent word to Rahab, saying, bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land. But the woman had taken two men and hidden them. And she said, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. It came about when it was time to shut the gate at dark, when the men went out, I did not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them. So she lied. But it was righteous, because they were after positive volition. They're after those whom God sent to spy out the land under direct orders from God in this respect. See? And therefore, a line in a time of war and conflict is legitimate to protect your own butt. To do what's right. She threw them off. But she had brought them up to the roof and hid them in stalks of flax where she had laid, which she had laid in order on the roof, verse 7. The men pursued them on the road to Jordan to the fords, and as soon as they who were pursuing them had gone out, they shut the gate. And now before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to them, I know that the Lord has given you the land. See, it's doctrine that motivates her for this. And that the terror of you has fallen on us, that all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before you. And she goes on, etc. But that was the situation. She was delivered and greatly blessed in time, obviously as well as eternity. All right, 14. Christ will give special recognition to believers that aid other population during the tribulational period. In that context, this teaching in Matthew 25. As he addresses the sheep, believers, during the trib, expressing the fact that their applications were directed towards him, even though he obviously physically wasn't there. And that's because they aided, came to the aid, provided succor, another term used, in regards to positive volition during this time of history. Matthew 25, right chapter here. Verse 33. You'll put the sheep on his right, the goats on his left, believers from unbelievers. And the king will say to those on his right, come, you are blessed, my father. Inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. All the different tests that will come upon believers during the tribulation are hinted at right there in that section. People thrown in prison. Some will obviously, many will be martyred, deprived of food and other necessities of life. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink? And when did we see you a stranger, verse 38, and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? The king will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, that's the particular Jews in the tribulation, another labors, even at least then, you did it to me. So you help in regards to their particular situations. 15, pastor teachers are to excel in this virtue of hospitality. 1 Timothy 3:2. An overseer, they must be above reproach, the husband and one wife. And as part of the list of areas in his godliness code, he must maintain temperate, self-control, respectable, hospitable, and able to teach. Also Titus 1:8. Overseer again. Things first of all, he's not to be, not self-willed as God's steward. Not quick-tempered, nor addicted to wine, not an alcoholic, not pugnacious, not a striker or person, not fond of sordid gain, but hospitable, loving what is good, sensible, just, about, self-controlled, etc. 16, Peter then warns that hospitality is to be applied without complaint. As I do, Gangusmas. 17, grumbling or complaining recognizes the possibility that individuals may take advantage of the one that applies or it may interrupt their life otherwise. A lot of times the act of hospitality doesn't come in a precise planned way, especially in these situations. And sometimes it, you know, may feel taken advantage of.